Be sweet, she warned. I can't, I said, taking a sip of my sherry responsibly. I won't be able to drink if I do. I used two forks to turn the leaves in the salad bowl, but they kept falling out onto the counter. Don't be timid, she demanded. Use your hands. She reached into the bowl and started to move the lettuce leaves into the vinaigrette, soothingly. Escarole? I asked. Your favorite, she said, and I pulled a leaf out of the bowl and popped it in my mouth. True, but I like everything, I said. That means you like nothing. Jake dropped the silverware into a pile in the center of the table. Anchovies? I asked, tasting the vinaigrette. Perhaps you didn't develop a palate, little one, Simone said. Perhaps you recovered it. We moved the plates onto the table, and Simone pulled the fourth chair, covered in scarves, books, junk mail, and old New Yorkers to the side. Jake put on a new record and propped the cover up. Charlie Parker's sax ran into the room. Someone had told me that when he soloed, he referred to the melody only by omission. He implied it. It sounded exactly like New York was supposed to sound. Tess, Simone snapped with her fingers toward a bottle of wine on the counter. I had already been eyeing it. The Pouffinet Arbois, an eccentric wine on our list, and one of her favorite recommendations for her more intellectually inclined guests. She said it was a wine that stuck in the mind. Jura, I said. I've been dying to try this. He's the Pope of Arbois. That's the trousseau. Moni, where did you find that? Jake asked, skeptically, grabbing the bottle from me. Moni? I have a friend at Rosenthal, she said. So many fucking friends, he said, and then to me. This is delicious. Have you been there, Simone? The Jura? Of course. I want to go, I said, inspecting the bottles clustered on the counter. It was a modest collection, but I assumed she had more in the fridge. Where the fuck do you think you're going? Jake said into my neck. He rested his chin on my shoulder, and I never wanted to move. I don't know. The Jura? I spent all this time studying these maps, and I want to see the land. You're done with New York already? On to Europe? I'm a quick study, I said. I moved to lean against him, but he was gone. You absolutely should go, Simone said. I couldn't go alone, I said and looked at them. Jake was kneeling, looking into the oven, pressing buttons, and she hovered above him. Moni, the light's broken in here again. Darling, what do you want me to say? I am not blessed with your amateur electrician skills. I'll do it tomorrow, he said. Where's your wine key? I asked, waving the bottle. Oh, no. You're not performing tonight. Jake will open it for us. I sat and Jake laid a dish towel over his arm and came up to me. Mademoiselle, the Pouffinet Arbois, 2003. He opened it roughly, in a manner I could never get away with. A bartender opening cheap bottles on the fly. He and Nikki could get a bottle open in seconds. He poured a taste and I swirled it. The wine was the color of cloudy rubies, washing up the sides of the glass, audaciously fragrant and crystalline. So pretty when it's unfiltered. It's perfect, I said. Disintegrating outlines all around, the glass, my skin, the walls, a blur of satisfaction that was totally foreign to me. I felt like I had arrived in a room that had been waiting for me my whole life. And a voice in my head whispered, "This is what family feels like." A toast, said Simone, holding her glass aloft. The way of life is wonderful. It is by abandonment. Emerson, Jake whispered to me. But he was playing too, his glass held up in the air. This is to our little Tess. Thank you for joining us. I laughed at her use of restaurant jargon, the phrase we used as a welcome and a farewell. I always wondered who the ceaselessly festive us was, why exactly we were thanking the guests, as if they had provided a service, a contribution. I wondered how it felt for them to be sent back into the embittered, poorly lit outside world. Thank you for having me. We were quiet, passing the plates around. Part of me had expected that they would entertain me, but coming into her home this time, I wasn't spit back out onto the street. I was becoming necessary. I had a strange feeling today, I said, tentatively, wondering how people started conversations. Would it always feel like I was intruding with nonsense? Did you? Regarding what? I was walking around Williamsburg, and it felt ominous. Was it the condos? Simone said, concerned. I can't even go over there anymore, he said, mouth full, holding a chicken leg in his hand. He was going to finish his plate before I had my first bite. It's happening so much faster than I anticipated, said Simone. When they changed the zoning laws in 2005, we knew that the end was coming. Friends lost their lofts left and right, but the speed with which it all disappeared. 2005, so I just missed it, I said. I thought so. We always just miss New York. I watched it with this neighborhood. When I moved here, everyone was mourning the Soho of the 70s, Tribeca of the 80s, and already ringing the death knell for the East Village. Now people romanticize the alphabet city of Jonathan Larson. We all walk in a cloud of mourning for the New York that just disappeared. Okay, okay, but I love rent. Is that terrible? I'm going to ignore that comment forever, Jake said. Treacherous, said Simone. That kind of sing-song nostalgia. But I guess I was wondering if it will ever stop. Stop? I don't know, the city, I said. Changing. Like, will it ever rest? No, they said in unison and then laughed. So then we just dance ourselves to death? I asked. Ha! Huh. Simone smiled at me, and Jake smiled looking at his plate. This is so good, Simone. It's always the simple things, well executed, that are memorable. I don't concern myself with complexity when I have guests. What was it like when you moved here? I asked her. What was it like? The city? No, I don't know. I turned to Jake. What was she like at 22? She groaned. He doesn't remember. He was a child. She was a heartbreaker, Jake said. And I was not a child anymore. You had your long hair back then. He was watching her, and I wondered if I was going to be the kind of woman about whom they said she was a heartbreaker. Oh, God, Jake. Don't start. When Jake was a baby, he would never let me put my hair up. Hysterical tears. Panic. God forbid I cut it. Tears? I was very particular about women, even back then, he said, and he nodded toward my hair, which was down. I still think it's too short. Me? I asked, but he was looking at Simone again. Long hair like that is for girls, Jake, Simone said, touching hers, which sat at her shoulders. Mine was much longer. I knew you were a girl once. You must remember. Yeah, Moni, tell her. I remember much forgetfulness. Come on, I said. The city in the early 90s was rampant with crime. Everyone was still reeling from AIDS. Entire communities had been wiped out. And all of the neighborhoods were being rezoned for development. Gentrification has always been with us. But these were massive, government-subsidized overhauls, not just a new coffee shop or a block of renovations. Was it so much better then? Do I miss not being able to walk this block in the dark? I can't say. But, as trite as this sounds, it was a very free time. And by free, I mean that I felt free to pursue the life I wanted, and I could afford to. There were still dark spots in the city, fringes, margins, and I believed, still believe, that those areas are what make cities thrive. But being 22, that was confusing. Confusing? I asked. Is that the word I would use? Seems to be the age that ladies run away from home, he said. I never got to see 23. I hadn't put that together, that Simone and I came to the city at the same time in our lives. Our first escapes. You survived, Simone said to him, and to me. It was confusing because I didn't know what I was yet. Does it get better? I asked. Can it? Was what I really wanted to ask. Aging is peculiar, she said, moving a piece of parsnip around the plate with her fork. I don't think you should be lied to about it. You have a moment of relevancy. When the books, clothes, bars, technology, when everything is speaking directly to you, expressing you exactly. You move toward the edge of the circle, and then you're abruptly outside the circle. Now what to do with that? Do you stay, peering backward? Or do you walk away? Aren't you in a new circle? Of course, but that circle for a woman is tricky. Tricky? It's a circle of marriage, children, acquisitions, retirement funds. That's the culture you're asked to participate in. Now, if you decline, you're in your own circle, I said. It sounded lonely, but also fearless. It's not so bad, she smiled. There's a settling of the mind. Think of it as trading bursts of inspiration for a steady, prolonged focus. Don't you think you were a bit reckless? Jake asked sharply. I didn't know which one of us he was talking to. Simone was quiet for a moment and said to him, I think I did the best I could. Isn't that part of it, being reckless? I asked. They didn't answer. They were staring at each other. The record had gone off, and I got up to flip it, and Simone stood and started clearing the plates. When I went to take the bottle of wine, Jake grabbed my hand. Come here, he said. He pulled me onto his lap. I looked at Simone in the kitchen, but then put my face into his hair, held his face on my chest. No one had ever reached for me like that. Like they just needed me close. We never get tired of talking about love, do we? She was looking at us with a dishcloth over her shoulder. She smiled. Sex and food and death, Jake said. The only subjects. He released me and I stood up, tipsy, confused. She said love, not sex. You're such a boy. I turned. Simone, that was so good. Thank you. She pulled out another bottle of wine, and I realized we were going to get drunk. I wondered if I would ever go back to my apartment. Let's try the Poulsard now. Liquid dessert. Perfect, I said. That's not all. Oh, no, I'm totally stuffed. Shut your eyes, Jake said. He pushed me away from the kitchen, toward the windows in the front. What? Tess, shut your eyes, Simone said. I looked out onto 9th Street. People walked obliviously underneath me. Inside lit windows, I saw people fulfilling their real lives. I saw minutes that counted. I was expanding. It wasn't just the job anymore, not just the restaurant, but I was finding a place in the world. Someone stopped the record, and it looked like the street was breathing. Then someone turned out the lights, and I shut my eyes. You can turn around, she said. When I did, she stood with a chocolate cake in her hands, with a single candle burning on top. Jake stood next to her, holding a bouquet of white tulips. My hand flew to cover my mouth. I thought, no, I can't take it. I didn't know how they knew, how I didn't think to tell them. I didn't know how badly I had needed them and how I'd been waiting for them. But I endured it. My joy. Don't ever forget this moment. And Simone said, happy birthday, little one. 2.
Oh, what do you think? You can get the pie in the sky and eat it too? Sasha said serenely. Does that translate to you missed me? I asked.
I didn't know how long it had been since I'd gone to Park Bar after work. Nobody asked me where I'd disappeared to, as if they knew that talking about Jake would give me too much pleasure. Instead, they kept a chilly distance when I walked in. Nothing had changed in there. Ariel and Vivian were back on and talking about moving in together. Will purposefully flirted with any woman under the age of 40, and Terry was a little fatter but still told bad jokes. Once I could get each of them in the bathroom, we would be in love again. But the only one interested that night was Sasha. I took a line. The coke rutted out my nose and I squinted my eyes. Had it always hurt before? Pain beyond the stinging heat?
Oh, you got plenty of time to talk, now the cock out of your mouth. You think I care whatsoever, you live or die?
He snorted the peace offering I laid out for him.
You looking very rosy, though.
He pinched my cheeks, and I knew he had forgiven me. Simone's cleanses had a reputation among the staff. Apparently, she wasn't very nice while doing them. Jake said it was the most miserable time of the year, and Will asked to switch out of dining room back waiter when she was senior on the floor. I was mostly impressed with how casually and often she said the word colon.
Spring cleaning, she said.
She didn't seem mean. She seemed really happy, in fact. And her eyes did look brighter. Is it all right if I sit with you? I held a plate of spaghetti and chef sundae sauce and 3 pieces of garlic bread. Simone had a thermos in front of her.
Of course. I don't have an appetite after the first day.
Did your eyes get bigger?
That's the wine. The puffiness disappears in the first 3 days. When was the last time you took time off from drinking?
Okay, we aren't talking about me, I said.
Your metabolism at your age lets you get away with murder, But every now and then, your body needs a break. All the dairy, all the sugars, all the acid. There's mucoid plaque that builds up along the walls of your intestines. It's black. You can actually see it when it comes out. So this is an opportunity to break it down. Expel it. Simone, I said with my mouth full. Jesus, please. 20 minutes before we do mucoid or expel. She took a sip of her tonic. How long? I asked between bites. Also, aren't you going to make Jacob late? I'm starting with 7 days. I've done 13. 7? Tess, she said, putting her hand on my shoulder. Your body doesn't always need to need. There is a still point in the center. You are crazy, I said. The thought of not eating for 7 days made me ravenous, even though I knew I shouldn't get seconds. Misha, the hostess, was announcing the soignés that were expected tonight, but I wasn't really listening. I was thinking about how much pasta was left and if I should save some for Jake. But I did hear her say that a Samantha and Eugene were coming in and had requested Simone, and I heard Simone say, "Absolutely not." We all turned to Simone. Misha glanced at Howard, who nodded at her to continue. So I need to move Simone to section 1 because Eugene only sits on 7. She hesitated to see if that was allowed. So, Simone, section 1. Absolutely not, Simone said again and picked up her thermos and walked into the kitchen. We all turned to Howard. Misha finished the notes, he said, heading after Simone and passing Jake, who was still unbuttoned, just getting to family meal. He looked at the table expectantly, and I shrugged. No Simone, no plate for him. He looked confused as he put his own together. Who's Samantha? I asked him when he sat down and started shoveling the food into his mouth. Samantha who? He said defensively. Samantha and Eugene, who requested Simone. Samantha's coming? That's what Misha just said. Damn it. He took my last piece of garlic bread, took a bite, and I grabbed it back. Samantha and Simone were friends. She was a server here. Okay. Simone's friends were usually obliquely mentioned, and none of them ever visited her at work, so I had assumed they didn't exist. Okay. I waited for him to go on. So she quit, and they weren't friends anymore? And it was super dramatic, and Simone doesn't want to wait on her? He wiped his mouth and threw the napkin on my plate. I'm going to find her. Are you on the dining room tonight? She could use you on the floor. Samantha was meticulous. That was the first word that came to mind. I didn't believe she had ever worked in a restaurant. Her hair was blown out at perfectly corresponding angles. Her cheekbones shone. Her hands, with long, pale pink ovals for fingernails, conducted their precious stones and platinum with ease. To top it all off, there was stark genetics. She was beautiful. And I was part of a cult that equated beauty with virtue. Those are new teeth, Simone said, watching them from across the room. Samantha's teeth winked at us. Simone exhaled and began her approach. I followed with a water pitcher. Though there were at least 7 tables being sat throughout the restaurant, they could have used some water. I took Jake's order seriously. I would hardly say we're fresh, maybe fresh off a plane, but I'm sure I look frightful. Ah, well, you've always been able to hide the damage. Simone pulled her shoulders back. Are you two still in Connecticut?
Back and forth, said Eugene, waving his hands. In the genetics department, Eugene had been shortchanged. He had caterpillar eyebrows, a bulbous nose, and not much hair left. He had to be more than 10 years Samantha's senior. I was familiar with older men and their younger wives. But Eugene seemed authentic. He had clever eyes, and he narrowed them when he was listening. It will change when Tristan starts school, but we have so much freedom right now. I'm trying to enjoy it.
By enjoy it, she means cart a 2-year-old around Europe.
Be nice, Samantha said, hitting his arm. People make such a fuss about traveling with children, but you can't let them be in charge. Tristan can sit through a 4-course meal.
How elegant, Sam, Simone said. Of course, Chef would like to cook for you both.
Oh, Samantha looked at Eugene and pouted. I'm afraid we can't accept. I couldn't stomach a full tasting, Simone, my jet lag and so on. But perhaps I can pop in and say hello if he's not busy later. And was that little Jake behind the bar? He's all grown up. Remember when you two were sharing that shoebox in the East Village? Eugene, Simone had this place. It didn't even have a proper bathroom. The top was in the kitchen.
I'm still there. Simone smiled. She smiled so forcefully I could hear her molars grinding together.
Well, it was adorable. We had a lot of fun there.
Samantha looked airily around the room. Is Howard here as well?
We're all here, Sam. I will let Chef know you declined.
Simone was stoic.
Samantha pointed to something on the menu, and Eugene laughed. You just can't get rid of the filet mignon of tuna. Like it's not the 21st century. Adorable. I love it.
Adorable.
I had never seen grown women attack each other so fluently. No one tossed out adorable at Simone. No one declined Chef's tasting menu. And yet Simone wasn't stunned. She was braced. I realized that they were women who knew dangerous things about each other. I shouldn't have been surprised that Jake and Simone had lived together. I knew she brought him out to the city. It made sense within the narrative I had composed. But it was so directed, the way Samantha said Jake's name, probing.
Eugene, Simone said, turning her back to Samantha, like she had taught me never to do to a guest.
The Dovisa? We have one bottle of the 93 hiding downstairs. Howard will be livid. But are you interested? If I can find it, of course.
Eugene slapped the table, thrilled.
This woman! When was that dinner? 6 years ago? She never forgets. Best server in New York City. Don't get mad, Samantha. You know you weren't cut out for serving. Bring it out, Simone. But make sure to bring yourself a glass.
With pleasure, she said. Did I dare to compare them?
Of course.
My loyalty fierce, but not blind. I struggled, wondering what categories they could justly compete in. The physical didn't seem fair. I wasn't mistaken. Simone shrank as soon as she greeted the table. And it wasn't just that Samantha was taller and had posture like a steel rod ran the length of her spine. Simone's shoulders had bowed like a stone had been hung around her neck. She was wearing her glasses, which gave her a slight but mean squint. The total effect was miserly, as if Samantha had sucked up all the grace in the room. Simone's nails, I just noticed, were clean but dull, and the edges were bitten. I could feel the jagged edges when they clamped onto my forearm, and she said,
Watch my section. Don't move from it. I will find the Dovisa.
Her bright eyes seem peeled away from her head. Maybe you should eat something real quick, just a bite. She was on day 4.
I would appreciate it if you focused.
What if they need something?
They're just guests. Get them whatever the fuck they want.
As if I could stay away. Samantha took one sip of her full water glass, and I materialized beside her to refill it. Heather was touching the table. She must have known them too. And she excused herself on my approach. Hello, she said, putting her hand on my arm to stop me from pouring. Her fingers glittered. I'm Samantha. You're a refreshing presence here. Heather says you're the new girl.
That's what they call me.
That's what we called Samantha once, Eugene said. Eugene Davies.
You worked here too?
No. He smiled politely. I was a regular, standing lunch on Fridays, but twice a week toward the end, when I was trying to capture this one.
Samantha smiled, putting all her buffed white teeth into it. Their pinkies were hooked around each other's.
But, Eugene continued, when I asked Howard about her, I remember this perfectly. I said, who is that stunning brunette? And he said, the new girl? And that's always how I thought of her.
So many years ago, stop. They laughed, the way guests sometimes laughed or cried because they felt like there was a privacy curtain encircling their table. I was always watching this intimacy, these people revealing their petty, hopeful, or maybe in this case, genuine selves.
Do you miss it? I asked.
The golden handcuffs? Besides the back-breaking labor and turning into a nocturnal zombie and the general cattiness. She paused and appraised me, as if I were about to go up for auction. Of course I miss it. It's family.
Yes.
I felt a kinship with Samantha. I would with anyone who came in and announced that they had once worked at the restaurant. We shared, even if she had covered it up with jewelry and skin serums. A muscle memory. We had both broken down wine boxes in the cellar. We had both learned how to tell when Chef was heating up. We had the same aches in our necks and lower backs.
I feel really lucky.
You are. You'll never be luckier. Her and Eugene's touching pinkies blossomed into holding hands, and I wondered what she thought being lucky was. Their eyes moved off me, and I knew Simone was coming back. She had the dough we saw, but something was wrong. On her way back up from the cellar, she must have reapplied her lipstick. Just slightly, but definitively, she had veered off the mark. I backed away as she began presenting, something I had watched her do wistfully, at all hours and from all angles. I looked at the Dovisa, the yellowing label, its promise of history, of alchemy, of decadence. And the label was shaking in Simone's unmanicured hands. Within 10 minutes of Samantha and Eugene bubbling out into a taxi, Simone's section was in disarray, and she was nowhere to be seen. I got Heather to help me establish order. As soon as I had a second, I found her in the wine room, a breadbasket at her feet, thermos in her lap, breathing hard and taking little sips.
Simone, I need help in your section, I said. 9 is pissed because they wanted the broccoli rabe and polenta sides, and Chef doesn't have a ticket, and I didn't see it on hold, so maybe they didn't order it, or maybe you forgot?
She stared at the wall and broke off a piece of flatbread. She crumbled it up.
It's funny, the people you become.
I exhaled. You need to get back upstairs. You think you're making choices, but you're not. Choices are being made against you. Should I get Jake? It was like car alarms in my head, knowing that her section was falling to pieces, that guests were looking around the room for their server. I saw a red stain down the side of her shirt. Did you spill wine? My tone exposed my disgust. She was obviously not well. It had to be the cleanse. Eat that bread, I said forcefully. Now. She ate a square of focaccia, chewing timidly like a child trying a new food, like she might spit it out. I'm getting you new stripes. What's your combo? She wasn't catatonic. She tracked my words. They just didn't puncture. The adrenalized immediacy of service, the force that kept the restaurant running, had completely drained from her person. 06-08-76. I repeated the numbers as I ran up the stairs. Only when I started to input them did I think it might be a birthday. It was the 06. I remembered that Jake was a Gemini. I did not remember how I'd come to possess that knowledge. It seemed to have passed to me in the leaky, drunken hours when information entered but didn't adhere. Maybe this was Jake's birthday. The 76 was a more accurate indicator than my half-remembering that he was a Gemini. I thought of him waking up last June 8th, 30 years old, and not knowing that I was weeks away. Neither of them had known I was coming. This June would be a culmination. I'd watch the English peas and sugar snaps come in. Maybe I would get a bike, and he could teach me how to ride in the city. And his birthday. Simone and I would plan a dinner, and he would be uncomfortable, but happy. When I ran back into the cellar, Simone was sitting stormily, glaring at the label on a bottle of Saint-Emilion. Quick, quick. I barreled past any formality left between us and unbuttoned her shirt. She let me. I forced it off her shoulders. As I did, her arms went up and back, and I saw a mark under her bra strap. What's that? She lifted the band of her bra, dreamily, still unhurried. It was a tattoo of a key. Matching. Identical. It was in better condition than Jake's, and looked branded into her pale skin. Of course, I thought as I balled up her dirty stripes. I didn't take you for the type. It looked ridiculous on her, like an accident. But it wasn't. I wished it had been anything else. A butterfly. A star. A quote from Keats. A flippant tattoo. Now her body was an echo of Jake's. No, his was an echo of hers. It was the first tattoo I had seen on him, back when he pulled me into the walk-in and opened oysters for me. Before that body became familiar, before I could find all his tattoos in the dark. Would Jake and I ever have private moments, just the two of us? If I left her here in the basement, the restaurant would be thrown into a tailspin. One bad night wouldn't ruin her, but the staff would talk. It would be a fissure in her power. I ripped the dry cleaner's plastic off the new shirt, hoping to feel capable again, craving order. It's a funny story, actually. I can't wait to hear it another time. I threw the light blue stripes at her. You're fucked up there, Simone. One more bite of bread, please. The fresh shirt hadn't revived her like I thought it would. She smelled stale. Or maybe it was the wine room. So 11 is mid-entree. We're running way behind for apps on 14, but drinks are down. I sold a Quintarelli. Only the Valpolicella Classico. But not the worst sale.
I know it's Italy, but they insisted. Maybe if you talk to Chef, he can rush the food. I would go straight to 15. Heather was dropping the check for me. I pulled her hand. She was breathing deeply. They were rough, lacrimal breaths that I knew all too well. Hey, when are the asparagus coming? Her eyes bounced to me. With this weather? She asked, consulting the ceiling.
3 weeks, minimum.
Oh yeah? You think it's going to snow again?
I kept asking her questions she knew the answers to. Once she got on the floor, she went straight to 15, smiled compulsorily, and snatched up the check.
We thought you went home, Heather said. In the future, can I get some warning before you cleanse your spirit, darling?
I'll just plan on taking the whole dining room.
Simone didn't acknowledge, apologize to, or thank her. I watched over Simone all night, but she was fine. Her tattoo faded from my mind as service beat on, relegated to the neglected file of weird, annoying shit about Jake and Simone. She got her normal tip average, an unfluctuating 27%. The mechanics never failed.
I thought you guys were such good friends, Ariel said later that night.
She was still half-heartedly punishing me for my absence from Park Bar. I told myself to be patient with her and Will, but I was willing to push it with her tonight.
Wasn't Simone like the maid of honor? Will asked.
Vivian was pouring out tequila shots.
You want a shot?
Ugh, I said. Jake was going to pick me up after he walked Simone home. I had no desire to get drunk, but it was the best shortcut to the reliable Park Bar intimacy. And, looking at them, I felt guilty. I was going to be a server. Howard had no idea how bad it was going to be for me. I couldn't even imagine asking Ariel to get me something on the fly in that harried, bossy way the servers did. She was going to beat the shit out of me.
Maybe in a minute?
All my friends came on, and Ariel made Terry turn it up. I thought she would grab me like she used to and pull me on to the floor to dance. It was our song when we were heading out into the night, the manic, dizzy piano introduction stretching us. The song was all promise, that this night would be different, or different enough.
You swallow, you cunt, said Sasha, putting a shot in front of me.
But hey guys, it's our song, I said.
No one acknowledged me. Simone's meltdown made me miss the simplicity of us getting fucked up together with no ulterior agenda. But I had an agenda now. A walk with Jake, a potential breakfast, things to stay sober for. I considered the shot. If I got too drunk, I figured I could throw up before Jake got there. I took it and groaned. It's like Samantha represents the life she almost had with Mr. Benson.
Now what if he came in? Will said. What if he and his wife came in? That would make tonight look like a non-event.
Abandoning her section mid-rush? Not exactly a non-event.
No, wait, guys, I said. Slow down.
Oh, Benson, the silver fox. I would have done him. Double shot.
And it was like out in the open, and Simone was putting in her notice without putting it in, like a 6-month notice, but still.
And Wyatt? Will shrugged. How does that phrase go? Married men always leave their wives?
Oh, I said. That's not how the phrase goes.
Poof, be gone, Sasha said, and snapped his fingers. You fuck the servant. You don't take her to Connecticut, okay?
I think Samantha lives in Connecticut.
Bravo, doll, Will said. So, a few years later, along comes Samantha. She and Simone fall hard for each other, like schoolgirl style.
But Eugene and Samantha fall even harder. She wasn't even here long enough to get a voucher. She and Simone had some bizarre falling out after the wedding. It just broke Simone for a minute.
Wait, Ari, I said. Simone doesn't get broken, especially by shit like that. She's not, like, looking to get married or get validated by a man. She's in her own circle.
Ariel slammed her hand on the bar.
Are you fucking blind?
Baby monster, you need a bathroom break.
It's like you fucking own me, I said to Sasha, standing up automatically and getting in line with him. I waved to Scott, who sat in his corner.
Back at it,
he said, mocking and cruel, as if he knew that I didn't want to be here again, in a cycle of nothing nights.
Like riding a bike, I said and turned to Sasha. What about Jake?
What about my baby Jakey? He picking up all the Simone pieces like always.
What about him and Samantha?
Why you ask that?
He grabbed my chin and looked in my eyes.
She mentioned him, I said. But that wasn't it. It was that Simone was so upset by Samantha, I felt like there had to be more to the story. A black aura of heartbreak shrouded Simone now. Her poems that no one read, her apartment that she could never leave, her expertise so niche it was skeletal. She hadn't made a choice. Someone else had. We locked ourselves in the bathroom and he took out his bag.
Sugar face, you better off just assuming that Jake fucked everyone. Where's your key?
Sasha, when are you going to be happy for me? Also, I don't have a key on me.
Oh, look who all grown up.
He pulled out his wine key and took a bump and handed it to me.
You know, you the worst kind. You want to marry the artist and live like squalor. But you wait. In 5 years, you'll be like, Baby Jake, why we eat ramen noodles every night? You a hustler. Don't blind me. I see.
The cocaine was an illumination. The bathroom florid, filtered. When I looked at our reflection in the mirror, we looked like a photograph. I could see that we were just playing. The degree to which I took myself seriously was laughable. God, Sasha, it's so dark here. You guys are so fucking dark. Do you not see that?
Oh, baby monster, please show me the light.
I'm just saying, it doesn't have to be like this. I checked his nose and teeth for him and lifted my head for him to do the same. He flicked something off my nose, and I grabbed his face and kissed him on both cheeks. This isn't Mother Russia. It's America. We believe in happy endings.
Give me the phone. Let me call my mama. Jesus fucking Christ. 'Cause now I really fucking heard everything.
3. The Hungry Gap appeared, spreading like a rattled plane in front of us. We extended our use of the word local, bringing up soft-shell crab and asparagus from Virginia, blood oranges from Florida. The guests, the cooks, all of us anxious, still shell-shocked from winter and bucking against the restraints. It wasn't spring fever, not yet. We didn't fully have faith that it was coming, but we had no choice but to move forward into the protracted promises. The sun came out for a moment. I stopped and stared at the ends of the branches, willing them to bud. I had just left the Guggenheim, and clouds blindfolded the sun again as I walked toward the train. I felt like a stranger again, like I could disappear into any intractable diner or bodega or train station. I got out at Grand Central, hallowed ground of anonymity and flux, and followed signs for the Oyster Bar,
It was a strange impulse. He had been saying that he was going to take me. It was one of his favorites. I don't know whether it was a Kandinsky or a Klee that gave me a curious detachment from my life, but I decided not to wait for him. Simone assured me it was an old wives' tale, but someone said that you were only supposed to eat oysters during months with an R in it. So maybe it was the impending warmth, the loss of the chilly R months. But I knew I should take myself to lunch. I got the last seat at the low counter, under a vaulted dome of tiles. I was prepared with my book, but I stared at the ceiling instead, inhaled the velvet scent of shellfish and butter, watched the servers and busboys, then looked at the guests, slowly realizing that I was singular in the room. I had nothing in common with the suits and their lunch breaks and blackberries. I belonged, but not because of my age or my clothes. I belonged because I spoke the restaurant language.
"Excuse me," said the man sitting next to me.
He was midway through a bowl of clam chowder. He was broad-shouldered and fine-featured, and I did a double take because he had blue eyes. I raised my eyebrows at him.
"I know you from somewhere."
"Oh, yeah?" I put my eyes back on my menu.
"Pardon me, I thought you were someone I know, a French friend."
"You have a friend who looks like me?" The waitress came up and stood in front of me silently, pen and notepad ready. "Can I get 6 Beausoleil, 6 Fanny Bay to start, and I'll move on from there. I flipped the menu around, scanning, not wanting to waste her time. "You have a Chablis by the glass, yes? You can pick." She nodded and walked away, and I fished into my purse for my book.
"You're an actress, then. I know I've seen you somewhere."
"I'm a waitress. You've seen me everywhere."
"You're going to eat all those oysters alone?" he asked, smiling.
"And then some," I sighed. It was a hazard of my job. Or maybe it was my nature. Maybe that's what they'd hired me for. That I was too hospitable to strangers. On street corners, in bars, in line, I felt a duty to entertain, as if I were clocked in. I didn't know how to be uninviting. I put my book up.
"What are you reading?"
"Okay." I folded my hands. "I know it's quiet at your job. You sit in silence at your computer, and when you do talk, nobody listens to you. So I understand the need to impose yourself on whatever docile-looking female you find yourself in front of, but let me tell you about my job. It's loud. I lose my voice, I talk so much, and people look at me, and they stop me, pretending they know me. They say, 'Let me guess, are you French?' And I shake my head and smile, and they say, 'Are you Swedish?' And I shake my head and smile and so on. But this is my day off. I just want quiet. If you want someone to put up with you, may I suggest your waitress? Because that is literally what you're paying her to do right now."
"So you're sassy, huh?"
"Sassy?" He was still looking at me, jocular. So fucking arrogant. "I have a boyfriend," I said finally. The waitress came and poured me a heaping glass of Chablis. It was flabby, but acceptable, and I thanked her. When I looked back at him, he was pulling out his wallet and signaling for his check. Did I believe that? That I was available to everyone unless I invoked Jake? By the time I finished my first dozen and ordered another, I was blissed out. I did wonder, though, if people would ever start listening to me. "Yeah, it's your karaoke song, but I thought it was ironic." "Ari, everything can't be ironic all the time, or it would lose its luster." "But you can't be sincerely into Britney Spears. Or I guess you can, but you shouldn't admit it." I was curved on my bar stool, my posture long forgotten, my feet thrumming with the Saturday nightness of it, the three discordant turns of it, and now a big, stunning glass of Pouet Fousse was sliding like glycerin down my throat. Ariel was closing up the coffee station. Will had just joined me, and the rest of the staff was trickling in, beaten up. Ariel was annoyed because she had fucked up too many times, and Jake yelled at her. Can't my sincerity count for something? Isn't it a byproduct of honesty? Of course, I'm not, like, holding her up as a paragon of virtue. It's criminal that they let her reproduce. But late at night, a little drunk, a little sentimental, I watch her old music videos online, the ones from the millennium, and I cry.
Did you see the photos of her when she shaved her head?
Will asked. He had his shot of Fernet and a beer. It should have been normal, but he looked so much older than the last time we all sat at the bar for shift drink. I hadn't looked at him, really looked at him, in a long time.
She looked like a fucking demon.
You cry to hit me, baby, one more time? Okay, I said, pulling up the Pouet Fousse bottle from behind the bar and refilling my glass. I can't explain it when everyone's attacking me, but she's around my age. And when I was growing up, I thought, that's what a teenager is. I wanted my body to do whatever her body did. She's so common, right? Attainable. She's not that beautiful, not that talented, but you can't stop watching her. That's why it's always the videos. She's not something to listen to. She's something to look at. She's so powerful, knowing you can't look away. And then this glint in her eye that she's just playing, that she's still a child, and she's played this fantastic joke on you. And then it's like those eyes went vacant. She wasn't in on the joke anymore. Does that make sense? She was the joke. She didn't know. Oh my God! This is a tragedy for you? That this bajillionaire, white trash, drug addict fuck-up with zero moral compass has vacant eyes? She had choices. She's a grown woman now. But Ari, I said, straightening my spine, feeling angry and energized by the wine. I don't feel like she let me down. I feel like I let her down. Like I was a part of this mob that cannibalized her. And you're right, Will. She looks like a monster in those photos. I'm totally repulsed. And I feel nothing but guilt. I can't, Ariel said. She put her hands up. This is what intelligent women think suffering is? I don't even know you. So fucking dramatic, Ari. I'm not crafting a rational argument for why Brittany matters. I'm telling you how I feel. Are you pissed at me about something?
Why Brittany matters would make a great t-shirt.
I'm just questioning your moral fiber. My moral fiber? Because I grew up practicing Brittany choreography in the mirror?
You know what she represents.
Stop. I finished my glass, and when I put it on the bar, the stem snapped in my hand. I felt a splinter of glass in my index finger and brushed it away. Everyone down the bar looked at me.
Come on, Fluff, said Nick, and glanced at Jake, who kept his eyes on the sink he was cleaning.
Sorry, I said. I held the stemless bowl in my hand and lowered my voice. She doesn't represent anything. That is my point. She was a little girl, a human. It could have been any one of us.
I call bullshit, Skip, Ariel said. But that's a nice fairy tale.
She grabbed an empty crate to stock and walked away. Will looked at me. I'm tired of her shit, I said. I collected the pieces of broken glass into the bowl.
I still like Dave Matthews Band, he said. That's kind of embarrassing.
No, I said. Nothing you do is ever embarrassing,
You're not a girl. I put on my coat, picked up my purse,